Good morning to everybody. It's good to be back, learning together. Of course, this week's Parsha Sashabu is Parsha Shlach. Parsha Shlach is a critical Parsha. Really, all Parshas are critical, but Parsha Shlach really is a turning point in the history of Klal Yisrael. As noted, of course, Bnei Yisrael, Klal Yisrael are really on the cusp of entering Eretz Yisrael. And of course, as we read the opening of Parsha Shlach, everything turns around. Bnei Yisrael are ready, are pivoting, are at the point where they are muchan u'muzumen, ready, set, and go to enter Eretz Yisrael. And as a result of their request to send spies into Eretz Yisrael, the way they did so, and of course the return response that the spies brought back, at least the majority, the lion's share of the spies, turned Bnei Yisrael off from entering Eretz Yisrael, and sealed their fate for 40 years in the Midbar. Yom Echad Lashana, one day, one year for every day that they tallied and delayed in terms of entering those 40 days turned out to be 40 years. And of course, the ultimate punishment for the sin which they committed was the fact that they were sealed for 40 years sojourn in the desert, ultimately waiting for them to enter Eretz Yisrael that much longer. We are all familiar with the basic storyline of the Meraglim. 10 Meraglim had a negative and returned with a not positive report, while two of the Meraglim, Kalev ben Yefuneh and Yoshua ben Nun, Kalev from Shevet Yehuda and Yoshua from Shevet Ephraim, came back with a positive report, tried spinning it around, and ultimately that was not successful. We don't really see a response of Moshe Rabbeinu in this week's parsha. For that, you need to look in Sefer Dvarim. We're not going to do that as much today, but let's just get a broader sense of the very basic division and divide that took place between Kalev and Yoshua as opposed to the 10. And then I want to take a more careful and closer look at Kalev specifically and Yehoshua specifically. What happened? And this I reference and refer to in the drasha this past Thursday. Why was it that Kalev and Yoshua had the ability to be able to overcome and to be inspired and to return with a positive report, trying to push the nation, encourage the nation to enter Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to the 10 Meraglim who came back with a negative and inappropriate response? I mean, how do you explain that? There are really two basic ways to explain this distinction. The first, of course, is one of Emun and Bitachon. Kalev and Yoshua, they understood the destiny of the Jewish people. They understood and they saw and they witnessed and recognized that the fact that God spoke to Bnei Yisrael in such an open, miraculous form through Kriyas Yamsuf, the Aseres HaMakos, Makas Bechoros, Matan Torah, Yetzias Mitzrayim, everything spoke to the fact that the Jewish people were destined to enter the land of Israel, Yetzias Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, Matan Torah to Eretz Yisrael. It seems to be a very basic pattern that God was sending the Jewish people where they were headed. And here we're headed again. And they had that vision. They had that ability. They understood that through miraculous events which have occurred thus far, we will continue to see miracles. They were willing to shlach yahavcha l'Hashem. They're willing to throw themselves on God the same way they walked into the sea and the sea split, the same way they entered and sat at the foot of Har Sinai. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu showed them kolos ubrakim, the thunder, the lightning, the ununcovered alahar, the mountain which was covered by these glorious, glorious, glorious ananim, clouds, the same way they were protected by the clouds. They had the be'er, they had the slav, they had the man. This should be no different. And the transition from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael should be a seamless one. They needed to have a bit more emun and bitachon that to lift their spirits, but that really should do it. And thus, Kalev and Yehoshua had that sense, they had that insight, they had that fortitude, and therefore they were able to turn to Bnei Yisrael and said, come on, we could do this. We made it through the Midbar thus far. Look what God has done to us in Mitzrayim. There's no reason that there should be any different. The other 10 Meraglim had a very different look, and their level of emunah bitachon, and of course they were great giants, as Rashi points, quoting Chazal, these weren't just 12 leaders of each of the 12 tribes, but rather these were the greatest members of each tribe, the most distinguished individuals, the most leading, highest members and ranking of society in the Midbar. These are the tops of the top, the top of the line. And Yoshua and Kalev may not even been the greatest of the 12, many Mefarshim point out that the order and the sequence listed in the Psukim, when we read of who the leader of each tribe was, speaks to their greatness. So Yeshua and Kalev aren't in numbers 1, 2, and 3, but are a little bit lower down. So you're talking about outstanding people. But they really saw the entrance from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael as a very distinct one. And the miracles that occurred in the Midbar belonged in the Midbar. The miracles that occurred in Mitzrayim belonged in Mitzrayim. And when we would enter it, so we would enter a different relationship with God, as we pointed out from the Tziv and his Akdama to Sefer Bamidbar, where we learned Parshas Bamidbar together. They understood that we're dealing with a different time period. It's true that God revealed himself to the Jewish people at Yetzias Mitzrayim with the Ten Makos, with Makos Bechoros, with Kriyas Yamsuf, with Matan Torah. But that's history. That's what was. But now as we enter Eretz Yisrael, we're entering the world of Teva, the world of nature, the world of the regular, the world of the mundane. And therefore, we need to look at Eretz Yisrael with different eyes, with glasses that are discolored and not the same exact as it was till now. And therefore, they were looking at the land of Israel from a very, very logical perspective. And therefore, when they see big fruit, they see big giants, and they see fortified cities, they ask themselves the question, we can handle this, or can we not handle this? Is it feasible for us to overcome these giants? And when they saw these funerals and burials taking place, they were frightened and scared, and they didn't think that they'd overcome it. So therefore, the point of contention between Yoshua and Kalev, as opposed to the other 10 miraglim, is how do you view Eretz Yisrael? Can we look at it as a miraculous, incredible land, where just like God has provided for us so far in a miraculous way, so too that will continue when we enter the land of Israel, and therefore we'll be able to overcome, we'll be able to be victorious, we will win, we'll beat the Canaan, we'll enter the land, we will be able to till the soil and be able to be successful the same way we have, and God will hold our hand. That was Yeshua and Kalev. But the other 10 spices, we're not so sure. Maybe there's a different relationship that's being begun, and therefore we're unable to succeed the same way we were able to do thus far. That's one way to explain the point of contention, the different ways of looking at Eretz Yisrael and the different ways of entering the land of Israel. Are we prepared? Can we do it? Do we have enough emunah and bitachon that things will continue as was? Or can we look at it in a different way? There's another way to look at it, and I mentioned this in the drasha before Shabbos, and that's really a question of perspective. You know, the saying goes that perspective creates reality. A person has the ability to be able to shape their day, to shape their week, and to shape their attitude. An individual's perspective on life creates a reality. If I look at something with a glass half full attitude, I will be successful and the glass will run over. If I look at something with a glass half empty, I'm concerned and I'm nervous and I'm going to err on the side of caution. It's sort of what Chazal say. Do we look at something with an ayin tova or with an ayin ra, with a positive eye or a negative eye? Yoshua and Kalev were able to look at Eretz Yisrael as tova ha'aretz me'od me'od. You're right, there are questions. You're right, there are challenges. Yes, potentially there are difficulties. But tova ha'aretz me'od me'od, the land is terrific. The land is fantastic. The other miraglim, the 10 miraglim, says, but. Yes, that's true, but there are other things happening there. And there we see the point of contention between Yoshua and Kalev versus the Ten Meraglim is perspective. How do we look at the situation? And yes, God has secured us, and God has taken care of us, and he's going to bring us into Eretz Yisrael. But now what? We're nervous, we're scared, we're frightened. Those are all true. But my perspective and my approach in terms of how to view the next step is going to be very much creating how I'm going to look at it. And that's what's called attitudinal values. My way of perspective, the way I look at something, my approach, my entire way of assessing a situation is going to determine how I'm going to move from point A to point B, from first base to second base. Yoshua and Kalev had a very positive attitude. They were a glass half full type of person. Their glasses were very open and opaque, and they were able to see and be positive about things. The other miraglim had a very different view and a very different look at the, how to look at Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that also speaks to the point of contention between Yoshua and Kalev as opposed to the Ten Miraglim. If you're interested in that a bit more, I discussed it in the drasha, which was sent out the other day. Those are the general ways that we take a look at the Parsha of the Miraglim, and specifically Kalev and Yoshua as opposed to the other Ten Miraglim. What I'd like to do this morning is something even more interesting, and that is to show you that even though we typically group Yehoshua and Kalev as an item, as a team, and there's no question that they were, so much so, if you look in Parsha Shlach, and we'll take a look in Parsha's Dvarim as well, sometimes Yehoshua is mentioned first, sometimes Kalev is mentioned first. There's really no distinction between them broadly in the respect that they both fought the rebellion. They fought the rabble-rousers. They tried to inspire and encourage the people to enter, that they could do it. They were both threatened with their lives. They both were going to be stoned. They both were going to be the people who were being run after because they wanted to be run out of town because of their attitude. So certainly they're grouped together. But what I'd like to show you this morning is although they're grouped together, they have two very different attitudes and approaches in terms of how to handle the situation. Let's take a look more carefully at the psukim in Parsha Shlach, in the opening of Parsha Shlach. Perek Yud Gimel is the opening of Parsha Shlach, page 798 in the Stone Chumash, if you, that is what you're using. I'd like to point out three very critical differences, three significant differences in terms of what Yehoshua says as opposed to Kalev, Yehoshua's approach as to Kalev's approach, and try to put that into perspective in terms of who these two people were and what they were doing. So if you take a look in Perek Yud Gimel, you note that the Torah begins Parsha Shlach identifying who these 12 Nisim, who these 12 leaders of the Jewish people were, who God acquiesced to Moshe's request to send them to spy out the land of Israel. So if you pick up in Pasuk Gimel, the Torah reports, Kulam Anoshim Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hema. These are all the heads of the children of Israel, leaders. And Rashi points out, Anashim. Anashim is a reference to Chashivos. They were very important people. These weren't little youngsters who were in the beginning of their careers, who were being ones who were sent to be the ones to conspicuously figure out and be sent on this mission. But these were the leaders. These were the creme de la creme, the heads, the chiefs of the tribes. And then the Torah reports the names of who they were and the tribe they were from. Mate Ruven was Shamua ben Zakur. Lamate Shimon Shafat ben Chole. Lamate Yehuda Kalev ben Yifune. So Kalev, of course, is a name that we know. And note, of course, after Shamua ben Zakur and Shafat ben Chori, Yehuda's tribe is represented by Kalev ben Yifune. After that is Yisachar and Yigal ben Yosef. And then to Ephraim, the fifth is Hoshea ben Nun. Note, the name is not Yehoshua, as we know him from Sefer Yehoshua and as the successor of Moshe, but rather his name is Hoshea ben Nun. If you skip down to Pasuk Tes Vav and Pasuk Tes Zayin, the Torah then says, Eilesh Mos Anashim, these are the names of the 12 people, Asher Shalach Moshe Lasuras Arts, that Moshe sent to spy on the espionage mission to spy out the land of Israel, Vayikra Moshe Lahoshea ben Nun, Yehoshua. Moshe changes Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Why? Why did Moshe have to do that? What was significant at this point in changing Yehoshua's name? You take a look at the Nitziv in his commentary, La Torah, Emad Davar actually notes that his name wasn't really changed. It was changed earlier in the Battle of Amalek. But really, his name was continued to be called Hoshea. You know, when you change somebody's name, it's very hard to break that name, right? Somebody goes by Joe, and now he wants to be Yankel, right? Yeah, everybody calls him Joe. Until you figure out his name is Yankel, it doesn't go so well. Or whatever it is, or his name is, a cutie little name, and he wanted to change it, it doesn't go so well. So the Nitziv points out that Yehoshua's name was really changed to Yehoshua back in Melchemes Amalek. But it didn't go, it didn't catch. Now again, his name is really secured and concretized at this point. That's what the Nitziv says. But why Dafka here? Why did Hoshea have to become Yehoshua? What's the additional yud? You take a look in Rashi in Pasuk Tezayin, second column if you're in the Stone Chumash. Vayikra Moshe l'Hoshea, nispalel alav. Moshe davened for Yehoshua. Yah, Yoshiacha me'atzas hamaragim. The added yud, that added little yud k, you, God, should be with Yehoshua to save him from the miraglim. Now, this, of course, raises a very interesting question. Why was it that Moshe is so concerned and so nervous specifically about Hoshea? There are 11 other members who are headed out on this espionage mission. There are 11 other members, chiefs, Anashim, Roshe, Bnei Yisrael, chiefs. What was so concerning about Hosea that he had to become Yehoshua? Why did he specifically have to be saved from Atzas HaMeraglim, from the concern, from the counsel of the Meraglim? And if we know that Kalev also is going to be a success story, that Kalev and Yehoshua are a team, they're a couple, and they're going to be ones fighting the rabble-rousers, they're going to be ones who are trying to encourage the Jewish people, well, why didn't God change Kalev's name? Why only change Hosea to Yehoshua? Why not change Kalev to other name? There's another way that you could turn Kalev into God should be with Kalev. But here already you see the first distinction between Kalev and Yehoshua is in the respect that his name was changed. Now you could answer simply that Yehoshua, of course, is the primary disciple, the Talmud Muvak, the one who apprentices Moshe very, very closely, and therefore he had a special relationship with Moshe, and therefore Moshe doted after him, looked after him a little bit more carefully, understood that he was going to be the successor of Moshe, and he was going to be the leader of all of these 12 who would bring the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. But at the same time, if we're concerned about the Meraglim, practically speaking, that they're going to overrule and overcome and try to thwart the mission of entering Eretz Yisrael, really we should change everybody's name. So really, how do you understand and why is it that Hosea has changed to Yehoshua? Why is Kalev's name not changed? And why are the other 11 spies not given the attention that Moshe gives Yehoshua? If you continue reading the Psukim Yud-Zayin, Yud-Ches, Yud-Tes, the Torah describes exactly what it is that Moshe asks of the 12 leaders. And Moshe says, go to the land, Aluza Benega, Valisa Mesahar, climb, begin in the south, climb the mountain, and answer the following questions. What are these questions? What is this land all about? And what is the nation all about? Hachazak hu harafei. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they few? Are they minimal? Hamatu imra. V'maharetz ashehu yoshev alea. Hatova hi mara. Is the land good or is the land bad? U'maharem asher yoshev ahena habimachanim mitzarim. Are the cities in which they dwell, are they open? Are they fortified? U'maharetz ashmein ahim raza. Is the fat of the land fertile or is it lean? Are the trees in? Are the trees out? What season is it? So Moshe really sets them up on a very, very clear espionage mission. He tells them exactly what they should be looking for, asks the specific questions. And they go. And here in Psukim Chaf Aleph through Chaf Vav, the Torah describes the mission and where they were headed. So let's pick up with this mission. And if you look in Pasuk Chaf Beis, page 800 in the Stone Chumash, Pasuk 22, Vayalu Banega, they do exactly what it is that Moshe tells them. They travel and begin in the south. Vayavo ad Chevron, and they reach the city of Chevron, the holy city. Misham Achiman, Shesha v'Salma Yilidi Hanak, v'Chevron Sheva Shanim Yimasa, v'Fnei Tzor Mitzrayim. And here in Pasuk Chaf Beis, as they ascend in the south, and they reach Chevron, they see the giants. Achiman, Shesha and Talmai, they are the offsprings of the giant. And Chevron, as the Pasuk says, has been built 7 years before Tzoan of Mitzrayim. But if you look in this Pasuk Chaf Beis, there's a grammatical issue that we need to figure out. The Pasuk says, Vayalu Banegev, they entered, they ascended, in the plural in the south, Vayavo ad Chevron, and they reached Chevron. What should the Pasuk say? We're talking about 12 tribes, 12 leaders, are we not? It should say, Vayalu Banegev, Vayavo'u. On Chevron, and they plural reached Chevron. Why does the pasuk say Vayalu Banega Vayavo at Chevron? Chevron is in the singular. It sounds like just one out of the 12 leaders traveled to Chevron. What happened to everybody else? Rashi picks us up with a story, the backstory here, and that is that it's true. Not everybody went to Chevron. Who went to Chevron? Says Rashi. Kalev levado halachsham. Just Kalev went to Chevron to daven. What's in Chevron? Of course, it's the Maros Machpelah. V'nishtateach al kivrei avos. And he went to daven at the cave of our fathers and mothers, forefathers and foremothers. Shelo yenisas lechavei rav lios ba'atzasa. That he shouldn't be turned, swayed, and turned in the direction of his friends, his colleagues, the Meraglim. Therefore, Chevron specifically was the place that Kalev went to. Nobody else went there. And again, this begs the question, why just Kalev? What about his partner in crime, Kaviyako, Yehoshua? And why did everybody not travel to Chevron? What was it that Kalev saw in Hebron that he had to veer off the track? Why was he specifically going to Hebron? What happened to Yoshua? You could answer again simply, Yoshua already received the bracha from Moshe via God to change his name, so he was protected. Well, if Yoshua is protected, why wasn't Kalev protected? And why did Kalev Dafka have to be the one to go to Kivrei Avos? Shouldn't he have been protected before? And if Yoshua was protected, did he want more protection? Why didn't he go with Kalev? It seems that Kalev and Yehoshua were up to something a little bit different and maybe had a different approach into how to handle the situation. But we're still not sure. We have to get the facts. But it's Kalev Dafka, specifically, who goes to Kever Avos, who goes to Maris HaMachpelah, who goes to Davin by Kibri Avos V'Imaos and Maris HaMachpelah. Yoshua doesn't, and none of the other leaders of the tribes do as well. Let's continue to follow the Psukim and try to figure out what is happening and why indeed Kalev goes, Yoshua doesn't, why Yoshua's name is changed, and why Kalev's name is not. Pasuk Chav Gimel. They reach Nachal Eshkol, and there they cut Michrus Misham Zmora, and there they arrive in this valley of Eshkol. They cut a vine, these grapevines, and they start to carry them two at a time. And they go from place to place, and they travel for 40 days, as it's articulated in Pasuk Chafei. And here, finally, the return. They return, and who do they return to? Pasuk Chavav, Ve'elchu ve'avo, Moshe ve'laron, v'kol hadas me'asah midbar paran kadesha. They travel back to the midbar, kadesha. Va'yoshivo sam davar, and they're ready to speak. And of course, everybody's hanging and bated breath. What's going to be the response? We sent 12 meragim. They're away for 40 days. What are they going to tell us? We went and we traveled to the land and we fulfilled our mission, which you have sent us. Right? The famous additional three letters. Vigam, it's also a land that's flowing with milk and honey. However, Efes, ki az ha'am, but, right? The famous but, the famous also, clearly indicating. You can't say implicitly, but it's explicit. They're being very careful with their words. They're speaking very, very meticulously. It's also a land flowing with milk and honey. But the people who live there are giants. They're huge. Amalek Yoshibar, the Amalekim are living in the land. Hachitei Evusi Amar Yoshibar. The seven nations of Eretz Yisrael, of Canaan, are living there. It's going to be overwhelming. We can't do it. They utter their reports. They articulate the negative, and here, of course, the nation hears what's just happened. So the 10 leaders speak, and there's no question it's a negative report. But who responds? Which of the two? Is it going to be Yoshua? Is it going to be Kalev? What's going to happen? Is there going to be any defense? Right? It's almost a court case. Bnei Yisrael are listening and hearing. The 10 Meraglim speak, prosecutors, is there going to be any defense? And if there's going to be a defense, who's going to be the defendant? Pasuk Lamed, Vayahas Kalev. Kalev silences the people. Kalev, where's Yehoshua? We haven't heard from Yehoshua. Where's Moshe? Where's Aaron? It's Dafka Kalev who silences the nation. And how is the Pasuk articulated? Vayahas Kalev as El Moshe. Kalev silenced the people toward Moshe. Moshe doesn't speak. Yoshua doesn't speak. Aaron doesn't speak. It's Kalev. Vayomer alo na'ale. We can do it. Let's go. We can rise the mountain. We can climb. We can go. And Rashi famously in this pasuk says, alo na'ale afilu bashamayim. Even if we have to go to heaven. Vuhomer asusulamos. And God says, take a ladder. Climb to heaven. V'olusham natsliach b'chodvar. We will do it. So if God says jump, we say how high. If God says go to Eretz Yisrael, tell me how to get there. If you say go to heaven, tell me how tall does a ladder have to be, I'll buy it. We're going to do it. Kalev doesn't hold back at all. We can do it. Alon Aleph. We are going to go up. Via Rashnu. And we will conquer. Kiyachol Nuchala. We can do it. The pasuk continues. V'anashim asher alu imu amru lo nuchala alos. They respond, right? The prosecutors descend to their... Defend, respond to the defense. Ki chazakumimen, we can't do it. It's too strong. We saw the big people. We saw the funerals. We saw the burials. We saw the fruits. We saw the giants. Vayotziu dibas haaretz, and they utter and articulate this negative and very evil report, and they say that they can't do it. And all of the Jewish people hear it. And they, what do they do in the beginning of Perek Yudalid? Vatisa kola eda, vayitnu es kolam, vayibku ha'am balayla hu, the famous pasuk, the people weep that night, and everybody seals their fate. 40 years in the Bimbar is as a result. And of course, this night, Batisa kola eda, the Gemara says, you cry tonight, I'll give you a night to cry about. And what night, of course, is that? The night of Tisha B'Av. The Meraglim returned with a report on Tisha B'Av, and that is the precursor to Tisha B'Av, the doomsday, the Jewish doomsday, the most painful, difficult day in Jewish history. That is Tisha B'Av. But let's look back. Who is the one who silences the people? Because we're focusing now on Yeshua and Kalev. It's Kalev. What happened to Yeshua? Why does Yeshua not respond? So let's just review. I've shown you three distinctions in Perek Yud Gimel in terms of Yehoshua and Kalev, who usually put together as a couple, as a group, as the fighters, as the antagonists, as the defenders of the land of Israel. But here you see three very serious and significant and fundamental categorical differences between Yehoshua and Kalev. It's Dafka Yehoshua's name who's changed, Yehoshua Kah Yoshiach Matzah Samaragla, and not Kalev's. Moshe looks after Yehoshua, changes his name, Yehoshua, but not Kalev's. Number one. Number two, it's only Kalev who travels to Chevron. Vayavo at Chevron, as the pasuk says in the singular, nobody else goes. It's just Kalev. Why Kalev and I are not Yehoshua? And in terms of the response, the defense of the Meraglim of Yehoshua and Kalev, who is the defender? It's Kalev who silences the people. It's not Yehoshua. And again, we need and must. And the question begs, why Dafka? Is it Kalev who stands strong as the defender of the spies, of the espionage mission? Why is he the one who stands strong and stands tall? What happens to Yehoshua? Before we put these pieces together, we must take a look in Sefer Dvarim. In Parshas Dvarim, that is where the story is repeated. As we always know, Divrei Torah Anim B'Makom Echad V'Ashirim B'Makom Acher, the words of Torah are often few in one place, but are many in another. And here we are filled in with the backstory as Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, repeats the story of the Meraglim. I'm not going to go through it blow by blow, pasuk by pasuk. I think in previous years we've done that. But I'd like to take a look specifically at how Moshe views Kalev as opposed to Yehoshua. So if you look at the beginning of Parshas Dvarim, again, if you have the Chumash that we're using, it's on page 946. And in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, Moshe repeats, reviews the mission of the Meraglim, because, of course, it's a watershed event in the life of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. It's what seals the fate of the Jewish people. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu describes in Perek Aleph of Sefer Dvarim, Pasuk Lamed Zayin, page 946, Gam bihi sanaf Hashem biglalchem leimor, gam ata lo savosham. Pasuk Lamed Zayin says Hashem became angry, saying that you too will not enter the land. Moshe, you too aren't going to make it into Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua ben Nun ha'ome lefanecha hu yavo shama. Yehoshua, he is going to enter. Oso chazeki hu yanchilen es Yisrael. He is going to be the one to enter Eretz Yisrael. Moshe is told that he won't enter, but Yehoshua. What about Kalev? Where's Kalev? If you look back a few psukim in Pasuk Lamed Vav, the Torah tells us that all of the people won't enter. Im yira ish banashim ela hador haraza, this evil generation, es aratz ha-tova shenishbati lasis lavosecha, nobody's going to make it out. You're all going to die in the Midbar. None of you will enter the land of Eretz Yisrael, Lamed Vav, zulasi Kalev ben Yefuna, except for who? Kalev ben Yefuna, Shevet Yehuda, hu yirena, he will see it. V'loetein es aratz, and I will give him the land. Asher darach ba'alavan ab'yan Hashem, yilei achre Hashem, he has followed after God. Excuse me, Kalev? What about Yehoshua? He also followed. What happens to him? Why do we separate, divide Kalev from Yehoshua? Look at the proper and positive approach and beautiful accolades that Moshe Rabbeinu and God have for Kalev. Zulasi Kalev ben Yefuna. Nobody's going to enter except for Kalev. He followed after God. Excuse me, what about Yehoshua? Where's Yehoshua? So yes, the Torah tells us in the next verse, Yehoshua ben Nun, ha'omei lefanav, hu yavo sham. But the Torah doesn't give the same level of credit to Yoshua as it does to Kalev. Why not? And why do we not pair, couple, partner Yoshua and Kalev in Dvarim? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu himself separate Yoshua from Kalev? Why is Yoshua only referenced as the one who's going to enter the land and take the people in as opposed to Moshe? And why is it that Kalev is referenced to as the only one who's going to enter from the people? What happened? Again, you see a fourth distinction between Kalev and Yoshua and the approach of Kalev and Yoshua. Let's turn back to Parsha Shlach and try to begin to put the pieces together to try to understand who was the man Yehoshua, who was the man Kalev, and although they are teammates, and although they are the ones who defend the land of Israel and speak up and encourage the people that they can enter, we still see some significant differences between the two of them. These questions that I posed in Parsha Shlach and the points that are made are points that are raised by the Chafetz Chaim, the great Kohen HaGadol, and the Yisrael Meir Kohen Kagan, author of the Mishnah and Sefer Chafetz Chaim, also has a Sefer Al HaTorah called Chafetz Chaim Al HaTorah. And in his commentary to Parsha Shlach, the Chafetz Chaim raises these three points and suggests the following presentation, solution, as to how to understand Kalev and Yoshua. And he says as follows. Any time when there is a group that is fighting God, and there's a group that's fighting the authority, there are two ways that a tzaddik, a leader, can look to sort of calm the rebellion. Right? Think about it. And let's go back for a moment in history to the beginning of the Dor. Remember the Egel Azav. Remember the Egel. Klal Yisrael are nervous. Moshe is gone. They're falling apart. And on some level, the Egel is the ultimate sin between man and God. The ultimate. But there's no question that the story of the Meraglim in a certain way mirrors that. Both events, the people are concerned, they're nervous, and they create a rebellion and a fight. What's the reaction? How do you react? Let's go back to the Egel. Who was there? It was Aaron and Hur. Aaron is quiet. Hur is very powerful and forceful and fights the enemy. What happens to Hur? He's killed. He's murdered by the people. The rebels kill him because he says, how can you do what you're doing? There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're creating a golden calf. It's inappropriate. He speaks strongly to them. Aaron doesn't do that. Aaron works with the people. And he sort of creates himself as a harmonious brother to the people. So much so that we question Aaron's approach at the Egel, because he seems to have been a teammate, even though, as the Ramban and other Mepharshim Rishonim explained, Aaron was just trying to create peace and calm the people to give them more time. Machar, Moshe's going to come. He's giving Moshe more time. So we already see that there's a leadership approach in terms of how to deal with rebellion. How do you deal with anarchy? How do you deal with people who are fighting God, fighting the Mesorah, fighting Klal Yisrael, fighting the Borei Olam? There are two approaches. You could take the approach of Hur, which is a hardline approach, which is to stand up and stand strong and say, no, this is not how it is. We're going to fight. And you know that God is our leader. God is taking care of us and he will continue to take care of us. Or you could take the approach of Aaron. Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. Why? It's silence. Pretend to be a friend and not a foe and sort of be able to calm the rebellion and allow for slowly, slowly to be able to deal with the people at the right time. This was the debate that silently takes place in Parsha Shlach between Kalev and Yoshua. Kalev and Yoshua had two very different approaches as to how they were going to deal with the Meraglim. And there's a positive and negative to each. If you take the approach of being a hardliner and speaking strongly, then you know that you're safe. They're not going to influence you. The people aren't going to take advantage of you because you're going to speak the party line, you're going to speak strong, and you're going to stand up for your position and your point, and you are an authority figure. That's the positive, and you will never be influenced. The negative is you could be killed. That's what happened to Hur. The other approach is the silent approach, is sort of the CIA approach. I'm going to go in, I'm going to work with you, and then at some point I'm going to turn on you. Now, that also has a positive and a negative. The positive, of course, is that the people think that you're your friend and you could work with them. and you have the ability to influence the people because they're looking at you like a friend and not a foe. The negative, of course, is that you may be influenced and you have a shot at becoming like them and becoming overwhelmed, because when you're quiet and you're secretive and you're not sharing your position, the people are going to talk to you and they're going to begin to influence you. Therefore, these are the two very significant and categorically different ways in terms of how to approach a rebellion and people who are fighting the Lord, fighting Kadosh Baruch. Yeshua takes the hard line. Yeshua takes a very strong position that what you're doing is wrong. It's inappropriate. He's the chur of Parsha Shlach. And he tells them, and the people know it, this Yeshua, he's a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. He knows he wants to enter the land. Maybe even the people think, the Meragim, that he's in it for himself. He's going to be the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's going to become the one who's going to bring Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. He's the next Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course he's not going to follow our plan. So the people know from the get-go that Yeshua is not with them. They know Yeshua is a foe. They know they don't even have Yeshua in their fold. And there's a very clear contention between Yeshua and the Meragim, because Yeshua stands strong and he's the leader, and it's not going to be, and it can't be. Yeshua is very, very obviously a antagonist, an opponent of the Meragim. And he says that clearly, and it's understood. Kalev, on the other hand, has a very different approach. And Kalev takes the approach of Aaron. He says, you know what? I'm going to speak silently and quietly. I'm going to be able to be a friend. I'm going to speak to them. And at one point, I'm going to be able to be successful. When the time is right, I'm going to speak up. And that's when I'll have my opinion stated. The people will think that I'm with them. They'll be waiting for my words. And then I'll give them the blow that they never could believe was coming. Because first, Kalev is quiet and silent. And then and only then, at the right time, will Kalev turn. And will Kalev be able to give them a left hook and be able to show his real sense of strength. With that background, the Chafetz Chaim explains the three very different, unique approaches of Kalev and Yehoshua at the beginning of the Parsha. At the beginning of the Parsha, when Moshe sends the Meraglim, he knows who Yehoshua is. He knows Yehoshua is his successor. He knows Yehoshua is going to be in trouble. He has 11 people potentially up against him. Moshe says, I have to save Yehoshua. He's a death threat. His earmarks for death, they're going to murder him. They're going to kill him like he's going to do to Hur. I got to change his name to Hoshea to Yehoshua. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe are changing his name to protect him from influence. He is not going to be influenced. He's Yehoshua ben Nun. He's the person who's going to fight them rather than they all know that. So therefore, Moshe has to change his name specifically because he's the one who's going to be under attack. He's the one who's going to be earmarked for death. He's the one who could become assassinated just like Hur. And therefore, Moshe has to change his name to give him a special bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he should be protected, he should be saved, and his life shouldn't be in jeopardy and shouldn't be in danger. Ka Yoshiach HaMeatzes HaMeraglim is not the pshat that he's going to be influenced, says the Chafetz Chaim, but it's that he's a death sentence. And therefore, protect him, change his name, so that he will be safe, secure, and be able to return to the Midbar healthy and alive. Kalev, Moshe understands, has a very different approach. Kalev is going to be the private eye, the secret member of the club. He's going to dress like them, act like them, talk like them. But he knows that Kalev doesn't have the concern that he's going to be killed. Kalev has another problem. Kalev might become influenced because he dresses like them, acts like them, talks like them, hangs out with them. He's the one who needs to be nervous. And therefore, what does Kalev do? He leaves and he goes by himself to Chevron because he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save me, protect me. I'm doing your will, God. I'm doing your job. I'm fulfilling your mission. I'm going to be a member of the club, but protect me because I don't know if I'm going to make it out. Who knows if they're going to influence me? Who knows if they're going to overwhelm me? Please protect me. Where does he go? By himself. To Kever Avos, to Maras Machpelah, to David, that he shouldn't become spiritually attacked. He shouldn't become trampled upon spiritually. He shouldn't be taken advantage of. So therefore, he dafka veers. He goes by himself and he'll come up with an excuse why he went to Chevron. Maybe he went to Chevron because people sent him a fitlach from the midbar to daven for the avos. But he's prepared and he knows what he's getting himself involved with. And he has in his back pocket the prayers that he's going to offer at Chevron so that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that Sarah, Rivka, and Leah can daven for him and intercede on his behalf so that he doesn't become infant. If that's the case, now we can understand back in Pasuk Lamed, in Parak Yud Gimel, who's the one to talk? Yehoshua, he's no reason for him to talk. The people know his position before he left. He's not going to make anything. He's not going to change anything. The people know who he is. Yehoshua, before he left, he's Moshe's Talmud. He's not going to hear from his Rebbe. It's obvious that he's going to speak the mouth of Moshe. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says in Pasuk Lamed, Vayahas Kalev. Kalev silences them. Why? Lishmoa Mashia Daber. They want to hear what Kalev's going to say. Sabach Ba'amar. He raises his voice and he says, Chizu Bilvar Asumanu Ben Amram. Is this all Moshe has done? And they're waiting with bated breath. Here it is. Kalev's going to turn on Moshe. He's going to turn on Aaron. But it's all a setup. Kalev begins his speech setting up and looking and considering that he's going to really turn on Moshe. Is this all that Ben Amram did? Is this all that Moshe did? And then the moment we've all been waiting for, Kalev says, Hashomea hayasavur shebala saper b'gnusa. All the meraglim, all the Bnei Yisrael thought that Kalev is going to turn on Moshe, is going to continue to speak negatively about him. But instead, what does he say? They were waiting, they were silent, the Meraglim weren't speaking. They gave Kalev the floor in front of all the Jewish people in the Midbar. A million people are waiting to hear what Kalev's going to say. The Meraglim set it up perfectly. Their scene is perfect. Kalev has the silence of the people. They're going to listen to what Kalev says. But Kalev ups them. Because Kalev till now acted as a friend. He's the secret agent of Moshe. He's the secret agent of Yehoshua. Kalev silences them. He has the audience of a million people. He says, is this all that Moshe has done? And then he says, Halo Karalana Sayam. Didn't Moshe split the sea? Horim Manu as Haman. He brought the man to us. The Higgins as a slug. He brought us the slug. And the people melt. Can they believe it? The 10 Meraglim were waiting. And Kalev turns on them. Till now he's a friend. And now he's a foe. But he's the supporter. He's the defender of Moshe. He's the defender of Aaron. He's really a teammate of Yehoshua. But two very different approaches. Yehoshua is the strong antagonist from the get-go. He's the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the leader. And often a leader can't hide. And a leader has to speak transparently, has to speak his mind, and has to say the truth, the emes, and he is the chur. He's the person who speaks strongly in defense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in defense of Eretz Yisrael, and he speaks with a very passionate way. And they know Yehoshua's position. He's the fighter, and he's the student of Moshe. But it's Kalev who's the secret enemy of the Meraglim, and really is going to be the one to let it loose. And that's what happens right now, even though he speaks passionately. Anyway, what happens, of course, is Klal Yisrael are not taken by his words. They're not defended, and they're not supporting what Kalev says, but rather they turn to Yehoshua, they turn to Kalev, they stone them. And this, of course, is what seals the fate. So even though the Meraglim were done up by Kalev, at the end of the day, they're the winners, because the Bnei Yisrael don't listen to Kalev, they don't listen to Yehoshua, they don't listen to Moshe, they don't listen to Aaron. The rebellion is successful, the anarchy is successful. Klal Yisrael in the Midbar and Lo Aleinu, we are sealed for 40 years of fate in the Midbar. The sojourn continues. And with that, we can understand finally Sefer Dvarim, Parshas Dvarim, the very distinguished and difference of approach in terms of how Moshe Rabbeinu references Kalev as opposed to Yehoshua. When it comes to Yehoshua, what's the reference? Yehoshua ben Nun lefanechu yavo sham also chazeki hu yanchilan as Yisrael. Yehoshua is referenced as the person who's going to bring the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. That's who he is. He's the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's not seen as the one who in the open argued and fought in the ring with the Meraglim, because everybody knew that from the beginning. Really, the hero of the story is Kalev. And that's why in Pasuk Lamed Vav, Moshe Rabbeinu and Sefer Torah says, Zulasi kol ben yifunu hu yirena, v'lo etein es aratz asher derech balavadam, yan Hashem mili achar Hashem. He's the one who fulfills my word. Because Moshe already knows Yoshua is going to fulfill his word. And Moshe understands Yoshua is going to be the successor to bring him into the land of Eretz Yisrael. But of everybody, it's Kalev. It's Kalev's genius. It's Kalev's approach. And not one approach is better than the other. There's the Yoshua approach, there's the Kalev approach, there's the Chur approach, there's the Aaron approach. In every situation, you have to know how to fight those who are fighting God. Do you fight them outright? Do you stand up for your point? Do you scream? Do you yell? Do you raise your voice and wave the banner of the Borei Olam of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Or sometimes you have to speak silently and quietly and not raise your voice and not wave the banner, but it's to do it in a more conspicuous fashion. And these are the two different approaches, Yeshua versus Kalev, and they're both praised, they both receive their reward. Yeshua, of course, becomes the successor, Moshe Rabbeinu, the one who brings Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. Interestingly enough, Kalev you hear very, very little about. Throughout Sefer Dvarim, throughout Sefer Yeshua, it's only a little bit you hear about Kalev. Kalev lives in Perek, I think, Pesvav, Tezayin, of Sefer Yeshua, where he receives a significant chelak in Eretz Yisrael as a result of his ability to be able to thwart the plan of the Meraglim and successfully take the position of the positive look of Eretz Yisrael, and with Shevet Yehuda, he takes over Hebron, that becomes his position. But Kalev, we don't know very much about. He's almost a secret, quiet figure, just like he does here in Parshas Shlach, quietly, conspicuously, silently, has the attitude of being able to deal with the rebels and with the anarchists and with those who are fighting God. And therefore, that continues to be his approach. You don't hear much from him throughout the Dor HaMidbar, throughout Sefer Dvarim, and throughout Sefer Yoshua. But it's Yoshua who's the strong leader, the one who's outspoken, tough, strong. He we hear plenty about, of course, and that's Yoshua. So although, in conclusion, we typically group Yehoshua and Kalev together as teammates, and indeed they were. And they're the ones who oppose the Ten Meraglim, and they speak positively about the land. What I've shown you this morning for the Chafetz Chaim is that Yehoshua and Kalev had two very different approaches, two very different attitudes. And of course, in our own lives, this gives us a very, very interesting way to contemplate, consider, to think, and to ponder how to deal with those who fight Yiddishkeit, and those who fight who we are and what we believe in. Do we stand strong? Do we fight back? Do we go on the offensive? Or do we try to be passive and quiet and silent and deal with it in a different way? And of course, both approaches are positive and negative, because if you fight back, you're not going to be influenced. You're going to be strong. On the other hand, you have the threat of coming people to attack you. If you're silent, so nobody's going to bother you. You're a friend. But you also have the potential of being influenced and overtaken and overwhelmed by that group. So we always have to think and consider how to deal with those who are fighting our positions, our beliefs, those of us who are standing strong, defending Torah Yiddishkeit, Torah Judaism, and Gedolei Yisrael for generations, wherever they were, our leaders throughout Jewish history, always have to think, do you take a Yoshua approach or do you take a Kalev approach? What's the right approach? Maybe it depends on the country, maybe it depends on the situation, maybe it depends on the era, but those are two very important approaches to very important philosophies in terms of how to deal with those who are fighting us. How do we defend who we are? How do we stand up for our strengths and beliefs? Is it the Yoshua model? Is it the Kalev model? Both are correct. Both are appropriate. It depends when, it depends who, and it depends how. Wish everybody a wonderful week, a good vach, and a Shavua Tov. Take care. Be well.